I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. That's how the police chief in Virginia Beach is describing the events of the past several hours. Paul Newdegate says officers first responded to a location where nine people were shot, one of them fatally.
While officers were actively working at crime scene, we had additional shots that were fired. That resulted in an individual being confronted by a uniformed Virginia Beach police officer, resulting in a police intervention shooting. That individual is deceased.
Several people are in custody, but the police chief says their involvement is still under investigation. Seven people were shot outside a sports bar in Philadelphia. Three of the victims are reportedly in critical condition. Fox 29 says a person of interest is in custody. A manhunt in Texas for a suspect who shot and critically wounded a police officer. The shooting happened about 40 miles east of Waco. More shocking pictures from our southern border of migrants packed like sardines inside a detention center.
This needs to stop. It is a crisis. It is a tragedy. And it is a man-made crisis. This was avoidable. This was preventable.
Senator Ted Cruz was part of a delegation of Republicans that toured a facility in Donna, Texas yesterday. Democrats were also on the ground at another facility.
Democratic lawmakers toured a model Health and Human Services facility in Carrizo Springs, Texas, with four unaccompanied minors to each bedroom, classrooms, nurses, recreation, and new clothes. With COVID distancing, the facility can hold 750 minors.
Fox's Steve Harrigan. More bloodshed in Burma, where security forces have shot and killed at least 50 pro-democracy protesters today. That's according to Reuters. America's listening to Fox News. Doing away with the filibuster is something President Biden has signaled he's open to, but he's also indicated the votes may not be there.
Eliminating the 60-vote requirement to advance legislation would require support of at least 51 senators. Support President Biden says does not currently exist.
The only thing I've been relatively good at in my long career in the Senate is figuring out when to move and when not to move.
The president, speaking with reporters near Air Force One in Wilmington, Delaware, added, "You have to have the votes." Democrats in the Senate have threatened changes to the filibuster rule to advance legislation dealing with voting rights, immigration, and gun violence. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
The next stop for Planned Parenthood is State Supreme Court in Pennsylvania. At issue is an effort to order the state's Medicaid program to begin covering abortions without restriction. Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers claim that denying Medicaid coverage of an abortion makes it unconstitutionally more difficult for a poorer woman to afford the procedure. Existing law in Pennsylvania limits the use of state Medicaid dollars to cover the cost of abortions, and on Friday, a panel of the Commonwealth Court ruled to uphold the law. Global shipping remains at a standstill at the Suez Canal, where a massive ship is stuck.
The U.S. Navy will send a team of experts to Egypt beginning this weekend to help them dig out a giant container ship currently stuck in the Suez Canal. The grounded ship has blocked shipping, where 10% of the world's goods pass through. Officials say the Navy team will include engineers skilled in dredging operations. The aircraft carrier USS Dwight D. Eisenhower is currently in the eastern Mediterranean during this latest Suez crisis.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson. Plans are in the works to pump water from the vessel's interior spaces. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News.
On the Beltway in Virginia and in Maryland, smooth sailing on the inner loop and on the outer loop. There isn't any construction or any accidents to slow you down. And if you're traveling between the two beltways on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway or 95, nothing to report northbound, and the southbound lanes are traveling at the posted speed limit. And on 270 in Montgomery County between the Beltway and Frederick, northbound lanes and the southbound lanes, nothing to report. 295, 395, and 695 in the district, including the tunnels and bridges, are at speed. No construction or accidents to slow you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
What a spectacular start to your weekend. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s under mostly sunny skies. We will see some added clouds streaming in during the afternoon, but dry conditions expected for the start of your weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Could see some showers or storms developing well after midnight and into Sunday morning. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Could have some strong afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Damaging winds, the primary threat. High temperatures in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Good morning. It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console, and Jane Houghton is our producer this morning. And it is day 66 of the Biden presidency. Now, to put things in perspective for you, there were 18 Republican senators in Texas yesterday down along the border. You wouldn't know that if you went to your Google News summary this morning. They've peppered it with a number of other stories, but no mention of that one. Now I have some audio. I want you to hear it. But you wouldn't know that they were down there if you didn't dig around, because you just won't find it in your summaries this morning, or, you know, most of them won't cover this, because the Republicans had some pretty significant findings down on the border. And heard the controversy throughout the week that began with the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, saying that the border is secure and the border is closed. Even Chuck Todd had a little trouble buying that one last week on Meet the Press. A week in which the media was not allowed in detention facilities, not allowed to go on ride-alongs with the Border Patrol, or the Biden administration certainly controlling the media and the media access there. They finally did open it up in one facility to the media. Took them a couple of days to prepare it. I mean, we hand select the facility, and then we make sure we've got the walls freshly painted, and we make sure that there's plenty of room for everybody, so it looks like everybody in an overcrowded detention facility is happy, at least for the time that the media is there. Nice try. Well, as I said, a troop of Republican senators there yesterday, and I think Senator John Kennedy from Mississippi kind of summed it up. I've also got audio from Lindsey Graham and Tommy Tuberville, but this is how Senator Kennedy summed it up.
I'm sorry that they won't allow you to see what we saw. I'm not sure there are words in English to describe it. If you talk to the Border Patrol agents, those women and men will tell you that what President Biden is doing is bone deep down to the marrow stupid.
Well, that sums it up from Senator Kennedy. Here's what Lindsey Graham had to say.
Just very quickly, instead of asking a Republican or a Democrat, why don't you ask the people in charge of policing the border what the problem is? Rather than making a political statement and a question, why don't you walk right over there and ask the guy, what the hell happened? Trump told Mexico we're going to put tariffs on all your products unless you allow us to have asylum seekers stay in Mexico. What happened? It went down to a 45-year low because nobody's going to pay $20,000 to come to Mexico and wait for 4 years. The day the first plane load of kids went back to Central America, the unaccompanied minor problem went to a 45-year low. So why don't you do your job as a reporter and ask the professionals what the hell has happened in the last couple of months, and they will tell you. They told the Biden administration, if you do what you're planning, we're going to lose control of the border. They were right. I want to know who they told, and I want those people to be held accountable. I'm not going to give this up.
We have one more clip, and this is from the freshman senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, and here's how he summed things up along the border.
Now we've had a guy come in. This changed it all. Border Patrol says, just give us a game plan. Don't do anything. Please don't do anything until you tell us what you're going to do so we can prepare. They didn't give them any preparation. They changed it. And what a mess. What a complete mess. It is, like I said, it is embarrassing that we have let down the American taxpayer, we've let down the people of Mexico, and we've let down the people of South America, that we put them through this. And if we don't change it, folks, like you just heard from everybody here, I'm the last one. If we don't change it, it is going to get 10 times worse. You're going to have thousands of people die, and you're going to ruin a country that was built on loyalty, dedication, and compassion.
So that's news you probably won't hear on MSNBC or CBS or ABC or NBC or whatever. That's a sense of what's going on at the border from the Republican senators who were there yesterday. And you can say, well, it's partisan, it's Republicans. But as you heard Lindsey Graham point out, he said, well, why don't you go over and talk to the Border Patrol people? They'll tell you what's going on. With that backdrop, on Friday, now this is a report from the Washington Post, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas fired most members of the department's Independent Advisory Council on Friday, a purge that included several allies of former President Donald Trump and veteran officials who served under both parties. Former DHS officials and advisory board members who worked under the Democratic and Republican administrations said they could not remember so many members being dismissed at once, as the general practice of past administrations was to allow appointees to serve out their terms before replacing them. This is not the only independent advisory council where this has happened, by the way. Now, the council is unpaid, and its leaders from state and local governments, law enforcement, the private sector, academia, and they advise the agency on issues such as immigration, terrorism, crime, and national disasters. Yeah, might as well fire all of them. Why not? Members serve 1 to 3 year terms. They meet about four times a year, and that is a removal of more than 30 board members as the Biden administration tries to rid. This is what the Post says, okay? The removal of more than 30 board members comes as the Biden administration tries to rid the department of Trump-era policies and practices, especially on immigration. Well, we see how well that's working out down at the border. And obviously the president has been asked about things this week. It has been a topic of discussion, and I'm sure you have been hearing about that and seeing it in the news, and we're going to get to that next. But first, let's check the traffic and weather. Al BD is in the WML Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, on 95, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, there isn't any construction or accidents, so the northbound lanes are traveling at the posted speed limit, as well as the southbound lanes are traveling at the posted speed limit. Right now in Fairfax County on 66, both eastbound and westbound lanes are at speed, nothing there to slow you down. And in D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, including the tunnels and bridges, so far, there isn't any construction set up. I do not have any reports of any accidents, so I would assume that you're going to be traveling at the posted speed limit. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
What a spectacular start to your weekend. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s under mostly sunny skies. We will see some added clouds streaming in during the afternoon, but dry conditions expected for the start of your weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy, could see some showers or storms developing well after midnight and into Sunday morning. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Could have some strong afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Damaging winds, the primary threat. High temperatures in the lower 70s. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
48 degrees in the nation's capital, 617 on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for joining us. And the blame game is continuing here as to what's going on at the border. Of course, the Biden administration blaming everything on Trump. And here's how the president summed it up on Wednesday.
So this new surge we're dealing with now started with the last administration, but it's our responsibility to deal with it humanely. And to stop what's happening.
And that's the President of the United States. How about the President of Mexico? Here is the translator for the President of Mexico.
Expectations were created that with the government of President Biden, there would be a better treatment of migrants. And this has caused Central American migrants and also from our country wanting to cross the border, thinking that it is easier to do so.
And that is the translator for the President of Mexico, Andre Manuel Obrador. So that's how he summed it up. He seems to be sort of putting it at President Biden's door, shall we say. Now, you may have heard that the Vice President, Kamala Harris, has now been tasked as the border czar. You may have heard this clip earlier in the week, but this is how Vice President Harris responded earlier in the week when asked if she would be going to the border.
Do you plan to visit the border?
Not today. But I have before, and I'm sure I will again.
The giggles, boy. Have you noticed that whenever she's asked a question that she doesn't want to answer, she just laughs her way out of it? I mean, it's unbelievable. But I'm hoping that you feel much better knowing that the game plan now is in her hands at the border. That's just a sense of one of the major stories that we're looking at this morning. Now, the president, of course, had a news conference, the first one, 64th day of his presidency, when he held that news conference on Thursday afternoon. And an interesting scenario. Now, some of the criticism that you may have heard, he had a little cheat sheet with pictures of the reporters, and also next to the pictures were numbers, and the numbers were circled, so he knew the order in which his handlers wanted him to choose which reporters. And when asked about it, White House press secretary said, well, you know, he wasn't out on the campaign trail, so he doesn't know who the reporters are. Now, wouldn't you think 64 days in, you might have a sense of who the White House press corps might be? So they don't, you know, you don't have to have a sheet that has pictures and little circles with numbers on who you're going to call on. Guess who they didn't call on? That's right, Peter Doocy from Fox News. Peter was a little upset because every one of these press situations where at least there's been the press and the president in some setting, and they have the little scripted sheets of who he's going to call on. Well, Peter Doocy at Fox News is never on the list. The only time Peter gets a question answered is when he shouts it out to the president. And typically the president does respond, so we'll give him credit for that. But it is no thanks to the White House press secretary or the press team at the White House. Other question marks about the presser were the fact that he had notes, he had cheat sheets that he referred to. And some people criticize that. Some people, you know, say, well, maybe he should know all this stuff as opposed to having to refer to his cheat sheets. But, you know, that's something you can decide on how you feel about that. We're going to get into some of the sound from the news conference coming up next here on the Saturday Morning Update. I do want to mention that we have Jennifer Harper on the way. We've got Jim Trusty. We'll be talking with John Gizzi. Of course, he is the White House correspondent at Newsmax. And we'll get John's take on the president's news conference and how it compares with many other presidential news conferences that John Gizzi has been at. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us. We'll get a read from Tony as what's going on with North Korea, as well as an update on border activity. And also on the program this morning, KT McFarland. And we'll take a look at KT with the Biden administration and her read on the latest developments in the new administration. It's all on the way. Stay with us right here on the Saturday Morning Update. And some of the highlights, if you want to call them that, from the president's press conference on Thursday afternoon. As we referenced earlier, access to seeing what's actually going on at the border and the detention facilities, the media blocked with the exception of one that they cleaned up. But here's how the president responded when he was asked a question about that.
Will you commit to allowing journalists to have access to the facilities that are overcrowded moving forward?
I will commit when my plan very shortly is underway to let you have access to not just them, but to other facilities as well.
All right. Let's go to his follow-up on that.
We haven't seen the facilities in which children are packed together to really give the American people a chance to see that. Will you commit to transparency on this issue?
I will commit to transparency. And as soon as I am in a position to be able to implement what we're doing right now.
As soon as I clean up the mess, I'll let you come in. But we got a mess now, but you can't see that. I got to clean it up before we let you in. One last follow-up on that.
Just to be clear, how soon will that be, Mr. President?
I don't know, to be clear.
Definitive? I don't know. Okay, I don't know how that makes you feel. It doesn't inspire oodles of confidence with me, but maybe I'm just being cynical this morning. It is early, and I got up early. Gushing reviews, MSNBC, CNN, even the Washington Post, the headline that Biden excels in his first press conference. I'm not sure I would completely sum it up that way. A couple of times he sort of drifted off. Here's one of them, and you judge for yourself.
I'm going to say something outrageous. I have never been particularly poor at calculating how to get things done in the United States Senate. So the best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you that you like to be able to, anyway, we're going to get a lot done.
If you were on a Metro bus, would you want him driving the bus? Would that bother you if he was driving the bus? He's driving the country, okay? He's the president. It's just a little concerning, and sometimes that happens where he just drifts off the road, which is not a good thing. One other clip that we have here from the news conference. President getting one of those really hard questions. Now, he took like 10 questions, right? 10 reporters asking him questions. So this is 10% of the press conference right here.
If you do run, will Vice President Harris be on your ticket?
I would fully expect that to be the case. She's doing a great job. She's a great partner. She's a great partner.
And do you believe you'll be running against former President Trump?
Oh, come on. I don't even think about it. I have no idea. I have no idea whether it'll be a Republican Party. Do you? I know you don't have to answer my question, but I mean, you know, do you?
Huh. No idea if there'll be a Republican Party. They're doing everything they possibly can to destroy it, so maybe there won't be a Republican Party if he has his way. So that's just a sense of some of the audio that you may not have heard this week, because a lot of the mainstream media outlets definitely won't be playing those Republican clips from the senators down at the border yesterday. It is 6:28. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. In the headlines at 6:30, two people are dead. At least eight have been injured after multiple shootings near the oceanfront in Virginia Beach. That from Virginia Beach Police this morning. Police discovering at least eight shooting victims at, quote, the original crime scene, that near 20th Street and Atlantic Avenue, at about 11 o'clock last night. While police were investigating the first crime scene, shots were fired about a block away near 20th Street and Pacific Avenue, resulting in, quote, an individual being confronted by a uniformed Virginia Beach police officer. The officer shot and killed the person in what the chief described as a police intervention shooting. A second person was killed in a separate nearby shooting incident. Police still trying to determine what happened, but did not believe that shooting was related to the first two. In other news this morning, U.S. stocks burst to their best day in 3 weeks on Friday, helping Wall Street to return to record highs and avoid what could have been a second straight weekly loss. The S&P 500 adding 1.7%, both it and the Dow setting all-time highs on Friday. President Biden is including Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping of China among the invitees to the first big climate talks of his administration, the U.S. hoping the event will help shape, speed up, and deepen global efforts to cut pollution. The president is trying to revive a U.S.-convened forum of the world's major economies on climate. It's 6:32. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, including the tunnels and bridges, so far this morning there isn't any construction or any accidents to slow you down. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, Inner Loop and Outer Loop, from the Woodrow Wilson Bridge to the American Legion Bridge, all lanes are clear through Prince George's County and Montgomery County. In Montgomery County on 270, northbound, between the Beltway and Frederick, you should find all lanes open. And on Route 50 in Prince George's County, nothing to report from the Beltway to Annapolis, east and west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
What a spectacular start to your weekend. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s under mostly sunny skies. We will see some added clouds streaming in during the afternoon, but dry conditions expected for the start of your weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Could see some showers or storms developing well after midnight and into Sunday morning. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Could have some strong afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Damaging winds, the primary threat. High temperatures in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
48 degrees in the nation's capital at 6:34. It's the Saturday morning update, and glad you've joined us on this first full weekend of spring. Jennifer Harper, always with spring in her step. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
President Biden holding his first press conference 64 days into his new administration. A lot of people have had a lot of opinions. You've analyzed it, and what is your take from what you're hearing?
Well, I didn't analyze it too much, but I did sit through the whole thing, so there, that's something. But yes, there was a lot of talk about how President Biden did or did not do, and certainly a lot of people said it was a test for President Biden, and a lot of people also said it was a test for the press. They were wondering if he was going to be exposed to the same thing that former President Trump was exposed to, and of course that was not the case. Kind of a mixed performance there from everyone, and there was some analysts were concerned that there might be a return to the whole TV journalist type of thing where everybody was looking for their 10 seconds on camera that would be replayed on all the Sunday talk shows. There was a little bit of that going on, but not so much. And again, like CNN political analyst Joe Lockhart, you may remember him as being the press secretary for former President Bill Clinton. He said this is a big test for Biden, also a test for the media. And his advice was, and he was a fairly fair-minded press secretary, as I recall, he said the White House press corps needs to adjust to the new president. The rules that he revolved around for President Donald Trump should not be applied to Biden. Well, of course, that's coming from Mr. Lockhart. But anyway, some of the White House press corps have figured that out, and some have not, he said. And his advice was behave yourself because distrust of the media is still very, very high. And finally, one columnist suggested that President Biden should make Meghan Markle his press secretary. That's how crazy it got towards the end of the week. Anyway, according to Peter Lucas, he is of the Lowell Sun. That is a newspaper up there in Massachusetts. He said he could startle the world, including the United Kingdom. All he needs to do is not fall down when he reads the teleprompter. Do not smirk. And at this point, Meghan, the foxy Duchess of Sussex, has held more conferences than the president and gotten more favorable coverage, and he thinks President Biden should appoint Meghan Markle his press secretary. So that was your Biden press conference week that was.
Kim Jong-un has been quiet for the past couple of years. Not sure anybody would credit Donald Trump with keeping him in check, but he hadn't been playing with matches or fireworks recently until this past week or two when he started playing around with missiles again. Joe Biden's take on North Korea.
Well, there wasn't so much of a take, and this was also noticed by some people that are very very up on North Korea, and that would be Harry Kazianis. He's the Center for National Interests Senior Director of Korean Studies. Knows a lot about it, pretty smart guy. Anyway, if you weren't following this, North Korea recently tested two short-range missiles. And a CNN report said that President Biden, quote, laughed off the idea that the United States should be concerned about this event. And a lot of people think, no, this is not a situation to giggle about. And according to Mr. Kazianis, here's a quote from him. He says, North Korea surely has a sense that the Biden administration will try and rebuild a strong sanctions regime with the intended goal of putting more pressure on the Kim regime. Pyongyang, through these new missile tests, is signaling to Team Biden that its military capabilities will continue to get more potent with each passing day. This is coming from Harry Kazianis again. He says even with a pandemic and international sanctions still in place, North Korea still can cause the death of millions of people in minutes, and any missile test of any range or scope only reinforces such a terrifying reality. So he's saying, you know, pay attention and don't laugh, perhaps.
Certain events take place in our lives, and we remember exactly where we were and what we were doing at the time. One of those events, the attempted assassination of President Ronald Reagan. It has been 40 years.
Yes, it has. A lot of people probably can't believe that, but indeed, that pretty stark and horrific event, Rick, took place on March the 30th, 1981. Of course, it was played out before the news cameras outside of the major hotel, rainy afternoon in the nation's capital. And the people that are noticing this, Rick, are the historians. And one of those historians is presidential historian Craig Shirley. He's already written four books about Reagan and another very good book called 1941. But anyway, he's authored four biographies on the 40th president. And he's definitely taking very close notice on this. And this is what he told me. Then on March 30th, 1981, Reagan was leaving a speaking engagement at the Washington Hilton Hotel when he was hit by a bullet under his left forearm that punctured a lung and caused life-threatening internal bleeding. Reagan's would-be killer, John Hinckley Jr., sought to murder Reagan to impress actress Jodie Foster. Although Reagan nearly died from the ordeal, doctors at George Washington University Hospital were able to stabilize him, leading him to a speedy recovery and a renewed sense of purpose. He says the attempt on Reagan's life so soon after his inauguration and the transition of power could have had a much worse ripple effect on the nation. You have to remember, Rick, and all you listeners, Reagan had only been in office for 69 days when that happened. He remained in the hospital for 12 days. But moving along, Mr. Shirley tells me, we were not yet 20 years removed from the murders of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. While overseas, the Soviets were still a very real threat. Thankfully, everyone from Reagan's cabinet down to his most junior aides and staffers met the challenge of the incident spectacularly as Reagan made it through the surgery. What's more, Reagan emerged in many ways stronger than he had been, not just physically, but re-energized and ready to carry out what he believed was God's purpose for his presidency. Again, that's coming from Craig Shirley, presidential historian. And if you want to check out the history of that, a good place is the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library online. I reread the history, and it talked about Press Secretary James Brady, of course, Secret Service Agent Timothy McCarthy, and the fact that the bullet that hit Reagan had ricocheted off of a limousine window. So also a District of Columbia Police Officer Thomas Delahunty. All those names are there, and again, that's at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library.
I know that you feature interesting real estate on Fridays, and coincidentally, I was looking at South Florida real estate news this week, and there was an article about the $10, $12, $14 million condominiums overlooking South Beach. And I got to thinking, after spring break, I wonder wonder how much discount you'll get off those $10, $12, $13, $14 million condos. But you have one that is celebrity-influenced.
Yes, yes, indeed. I do have weekend real estate every Friday, an interesting property somewhere, but this caught my eye. This is Tom Cruise's Legacy Estate Ranch, and it is built on 320 acres in Telluride, Colorado, and the famous actor's property includes a native stone and cedar main house with four bedrooms that is 11,512 square feet. Plus a three-bedroom guest house, which between them they have nine baths, beam ceilings, staggering views of the mountain, wood and stone interiors, a sport court for tennis, basketball, ice hockey, a private trail system, luxury meets legend, and Rick, this is priced at $39.5 million. If you're curious about that, that is at southbeesrealty.com. And you can always find interesting properties there, but that's kind of a big one.
320 acres, $39.5 million, still overpriced.
I don't do math.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you so much, as always.
Thank you, and have a good weekend, everybody.
6:45, the Saturday morning update. We'll talk to Jim Trusty next, but right now, Al Bedee is in the WML Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on 95, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound lanes are clear, and the southbound lanes, there isn't any construction or any accidents. Into Fairfax County, on 66 eastbound, all lanes are clear that way. And on the westbound side of 66 in Fairfax County, you shouldn't find any delays. And if you happen to be doing an airport run this morning, whether it's BWI, National, or Dulles, the roads leading up to the terminals, there aren't any slowdowns, so you should be able to hit the terminal on time and get to your gate on time. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
What a spectacular start to your weekend. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s under mostly sunny skies. We will see some added clouds streaming in during the afternoon, but dry conditions expected for the start of your weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Could see some showers or storms developing well after midnight and into Sunday morning. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Could have some strong afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Damaging winds the primary threat. High temperatures in the lower 70s. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 48 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:46 on WMAL. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Jim Trusty joins us every week. He is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice, now a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick.
Opening statements are set for Monday in a trial that will dominate the news in the weeks ahead, that of Officer Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis, Minnesota, charged in the death of George Floyd. And when there is a case that gets so much media attention and so much emotion, the question is, how do you get a fair trial? And they already had sought a change of venue in this case.
Yeah, I mean, this whole area of pretrial publicity and a change of venue is becoming a real minefield for litigators, particularly for prosecutors, because they want to prosecute the case in the county or the district where it took place. They want a jury that's familiar with the territory. They want to be on their home court. And the pretrial publicity creates some real issues. So the Chauvin case, which got about as much, you know, pretrial publicity as you can imagine, is making it very difficult to seat a fair jury. You have jurors being asked numerous questions about their opinions of the case that they formed from the media, which is a pretty dangerous thing. And the judge knows that the judge himself is on a tightrope when it comes to navigating this territory and making sure that the jury will be acceptable in the long run when it goes on appeal.
The attorneys on either side have the opportunity to express their opinions about the jurors. What is the process in terms of what you look for in whether you feel a juror is going to be objective or not?
Well, the juror has to get through the questioning in a way where they can credibly say that whatever they've heard about the case, they're willing to sit back and decide the case on the evidence presented before them. And now some folks are going to say that and not mean it. Other folks are going to mean it but not be able to do it. But the point is, you're not automatically eliminated simply because you've heard of the case or read something about it. It's a question of whether you can put that kind of information aside and weigh the case fairly. So if it's clear that they're substantially impaired, if they're telling the court, hey, I pretty much know he's guilty, or I pretty much know he's not guilty, those are the types of jurors that get struck for cause, meaning the judge eliminates them from the jury pool and it doesn't cost the litigators any of their handful of strikes that they can use for other reasons. If the juror is not struck for cause, there's still a possibility that the individual parties will use some of their peremptory challenges, they call it, to get rid of that juror because they just don't like the vibe or don't think the person's going to be fair.
Suppose you're the defense attorney for Derek Chauvin here. How do you deal with the fact that there is video of the incident, and that video has been seen in snippets? It may have been edited when certain jurors may have seen the video. How does video of the actual incident play into all of the objectivity questions?
Well, it's a great question because, you know, it is going to be a huge part of the trial. But you know what's interesting about that that I was thinking in terms of the Chauvin case? If you go back to the Rodney King incident where the L.A. police officers were on trial for beating Rodney King, the defense played the video over and over and over again during the trial, sometimes partially, sometimes fully. And I think it actually had an interesting effect on the jury. It kind of desensitized them. You know, the first time you watch a video where something horrible happens, like a person dies, it's obviously going to be gripping if you have any semblance of humanity in you. It's going to be emotional, powerful, upsetting. But there is something about playing it over and over again and kind of dissecting it that seemed to benefit the police officers on trial in that case so many years ago. So it wouldn't surprise me if Chauvin's attorney take the same tack, where they feel like we've got to embrace the video, we've got to talk about the overall context of the arrest, the autopsy findings, everything else they can to make it a more, I guess, clinical exercise than an emotional one.
A while back, we talked about the conviction of the Boston bomber Zokhar Tsarnaev, and there was a reversal that had to do with the penalty phase. And there's a recent development on that?
Well, there is. There's a couple of things going on. You know, the case was reversed by the Court of Appeals on jury selection grounds. They picked apart the process that the trial court used in ensuring that pretrial publicity didn't stain the potential jurors, and reversed the case. And it was headed towards the Supreme Court, possibly for argument this fall. But the more recent event is at least some public questioning of whether DOJ is going to withdraw the appeal, which to me would be really an outrageous scenario where they essentially give up on the previously obtained death verdict here 7 years after the bombing. But again, it's a case that holds a lesson for the Chauvin prosecutors, which is jury selection is an easy area for appellate courts to pick apart the trial and declare it unfair, and resetting it for a penalty phase sounds like it's not that big a deal, but years after the trial, it is. And you'd have to basically redo the whole trial.
And this whole question of jury selection will come up again in the shooting in Boulder, Colorado, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of living the early stages of that situation now. And I know that sounds kind of crazy when nothing's happened in terms of court except for an arraignment, I suppose. But the Boulder, Colorado District Attorney's Office had a press conference, and they're asked, you know, very logical questions by the reporters about motivation. You know, was this a terrorist event? Is it a mental health issue? And clearly the DA wants to be able to answer those questions at some point. But, you know, this is the type of information that when a district attorney stands up and says, you know, this was terrorism or this was mental health or whatever the explanation may be of motive, it's real likely that's going to be thrown in the trial attorney's face someday as being inflammatory, as poisoning the jury pool. So it's a real difficult walk for these prosecutors and police chiefs to inform the public on things that the public really wants to know, but not to be poking the jury selection bear by putting out inflammatory information that's going to be quoted against you in motions down the road.
I want to turn to New York. Jim, we've talked a lot about the legal exposure that Governor Andrew Cuomo may be facing. Reports this week that he actually put family members ahead in line to get early tests for COVID, and that was at a point where it was virtually impossible to get a COVID test because there were so few around. Apparently, according to the reports, the governor lined up tests for family members and even some business associates. Any legal exposure there for that kind of behavior?
Well, it's not grabbing me as having a real legal consequence. You know, the state attorney general, who's no stranger to politics herself, basically immediately was saying we need the New York Joint Commission on Public Ethics to look into it. Well, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics can give advice, write advisory opinions, publicize financial disclosures by government officials. There are no teeth there. There's no prosecution coming out of that. So it can be extremely reprehensible and elitist, or maybe typical Cuomo, depending on how you look at it. But, you know, I wouldn't expect criminal charges coming out of it.
And one last thing I want to mention is you wrote a really interesting article on your blog, and it has to do with double jeopardy and the Paul Manafort prosecution. And it's something I think makes really interesting weekend reading. But real quick, in a paragraph or two, tell us about the topic and what people will find there.
Well, first of all, thanks for giving it a nice plug. I appreciate it. The good news for anybody that's going to read it is it's only probably, I don't know, 750 words, so it's quick. It's a blog. It's not a book. But, you know, it's kind of two levels. The first thing is just talking about the notion of double jeopardy, the federal constitution and the state constitutional version. And the state constitutional version in New York was much more protective and is why Manafort's case was dismissed. But it's also a little bit of a discussion about one of my favorite areas as a person who was a prosecutor for 27 years, and that's the conduct of prosecutors. And the district attorney in that case, you know, announced that Manafort couldn't escape New York justice and was overtly talking about, you know, how he wanted to thwart any pardon by Trump. And what I think needs to be explored that nobody's talking about is that case was dismissed in a New York minute. I mean, that case was easily dismissed by the trial court and upheld by appellate courts for this double jeopardy violation. And so, you know, I want to know who told Cy Vance that this was a righteous case. You know, did his career prosecutors tell him, we don't have a chance, we're going to get dismissed, and he still pushed it through? And that's what I worry about, these very politicized prosecutors who are either looking to have a stepping stone to some greater political gig, or they just have these oversized egos where they press the boundaries of ethics because they and their cases are so important. So, you know, that's probably longer than the blog, but that's what we talked about in this blog that can be found at Trusty Lawyer.
Really interesting read, and you've got two ways to find it, right?
Well, if they're on Twitter, find me, Trusty Lawyer. If not, If for a Law, our website, has a series of columns called Crime in the Suites, a little white-collar pun, and that's where they can find it.
And that's IFRA, I-F-R-A-H, IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim Trusty, thank you very much as always.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
And you too. 6:56, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. John Gizzi's coming up next. We're going to get his read on the president's news conference and some of the other things going on in politics this week. We've got Cheryl Atkison coming up this morning, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland, all on the way in the 7 o'clock hour. Do stay with us.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.